Thank you very much for the opportunity to share my experience with you today, and it's a pleasure to return to UK Connections again this year. I'll start with a disclosure that I'm a newcomer to the gaming community. I'm not a war gamer. I'm an analyst. I'm an analyst who's interested in doing rigorous analysis and to help solve important problems which are on the interface of science and security. So tomorrow we're actually running a workshop on the tasking of three strategic level missile defense and nuclear deterrence gaming events. And in this workshop we'll be seeking input from UK officials and NATO officials and our project advisors to try to figure out what is the most interesting, relevant, and analytically challenging question that we could gain. So these games are, they constitute the experimental component of a two-year study that examines how missile defense will affect nuclear deterrence and stability in the new strategic environment. So this is a study that's sponsored by the Carnegie Corporation of New York, and it's led by the Center for Science and Security Studies here at King's. And I'm actually based at Stanford. So I'll give you a brief overview of the project. I'll explain why we chose gaming as a method of inquiry. Then I'll talk a little bit about the process of how we convince funders and government stakeholders that this is a worthwhile project. We must write a new playbook to deter Russia's malign and destabilizing influence, coercion, and aggression. So that's what U.S. Secretary of Defense Ash Carter said last year, and he said that we need a new playbook that better integrates conventional and nuclear deterrence. So missile defense, specifically the capability to defend against limited nuclear missile strikes, that was an important new addition to the United States and NATO's post-Cold War nuclear deterrence playbook. And so that playbook is now outdated. So the question is, should the role of missile defense change? And if so, how? So missile defense is a stabilizing element of national power. And it's stabilizing because overall it will help reduce the risks posed by 21st century nuclear challengers, countries like Iran, like North Korea, who are equipped with nuclear missiles and nuclear blackmail strategies. So that's the core idea that's underpinned the post-Cold War renaissance of missile defense technology, and it's the idea that's at the core of current US and NATO missile defense posture. But this idea may no longer hold in the current environment. In the new environment, missile defense could increase some risks, but decrease others, and it could be stabilizing in one context, but destabilizing in another. And as relations with major and minor nuclear powers change, and as allies and adversaries develop new capabilities, we need to carefully consider how, what are the factors and what are the mechanisms and how missile defense could promote greater stability. So that's the focus of our present project, and so I'll give a brief overview of its objectives and activities, and then highlight, talk about the why we chose wargaming. So the project will challenge It aims to challenge current strategic thinking on the relationship between missile defense and nuclear weapons. Our basic assumptions need to be reassessed, and this is a multinational problem that's of a global scale. But we're only interested in the role of missile defense in the changing relationship between the United States, NATO, and Russia. So also in terms of scope, our focus is on the risk of nuclear conflict. Missile defense has a nuclear and conventional dimensions, but we're interested in its effects on nuclear use. A new U.S. administration will likely conduct a major review of missile defense policy next year. discussions of deterrence and defense posture review at NATO are also underway, and so there's time to think, but there's also an opportunity to influence policy. And one way of doing that is to help shape the expert debate and to build points of agreement between U.S. stakeholders and NATO allies on what some of these, on how do we frame this issue. So this is a two-year project. It includes five types of activities. We have research, so that's data collection, analysis. The experimental phase starts in September this month with three gaming events later this year and then during the first half of next year. And then we'll conclude with reporting and dissemination, which will take place throughout the project. So conducting evidence-based research on missile defense and nuclear crisis is very problematic. Missile defense deployments are relatively new development. Nuclear use is fortunately outside of human experience. So is it possible to get any empirical data? And the answer is yes, it's possible. And the project will be based entirely on unclassified open source data. So we have two types of materials that we'll use, published open source materials, but also interviews with US and European and Russian stakeholders. And so we aim to discover how military planners and policymakers think about each other's military capability. We'll also try to gather, have a collection of scenarios, of types of scenarios of nuclear use and the role of missile defense in past crises. So for example, we have, so there are few because missile defense technology is only now being deployed, but for example, in 2008, during the Georgia crisis, we had Russian nuclear contingency planning against U.S. Aegis ships in the Black Sea that were not nuclear capable then, but that were not missile defense capable then, but are now. And so we'll combine qualitative analysis with physical and mathematical modeling. So we'll be modeling physical events where the principles of interaction are well known, but we'll be doing inductive sort of bottom-up analysis of how people perceive these relationships. So our aim is to identify the key technical and political factors that influence how missile defense affects nuclear risks. And I'll give you an example of what that might look like. So the stabilizing or destabilizing role of missile defense has been largely attributed to their anti-ballistic missile function. But missile defense assets that are currently deployed have at least five functions: air and missile defense, nuclear and conventional attack, and anti-satellite capability. And so that's well understood by military planners, not so well incorporated by the analytical and policy communities. And so that's an example of one new factor that we could explore. And so our approach is very different from the analytical approaches that were used, that have been used during the Cold War and that are still being reproduced today. So these nuclear exchange models assume that the mechanisms of interaction are well known, but nearly no one believes today that a bolt out of the blue nuclear attack is likely, so this kind of modeling is really outdated. So we'll have three strategic level gaming events at the UK Defense Academy, or here at King's College And players will include former U.S. and European officials, ideally also Russian former officials. And getting Russian participation might be difficult in the current political environment, but getting people with deep understanding of Russian strategy and operations will be possible. So we don't yet know what problems the games should address, and then how to design them to produce useful insights. So this will be the focus of the workshop tomorrow, and the group will explore the scoping question through three interrelated contexts. So we have the policy context: what decisions do policymakers need to make in the next 2 years? The strategic and operational context: so what is the strategic and operational value of defenses? And then technology and force structure: so what are some of the characteristics of weapon systems that might be relevant to that might be interesting and relevant to the broad focus of the project? So the focus really is to identify knowledge gaps, and the experiments should produce insights that help inform the decisions on missile defense and nuclear policy that will be made in the next 2 years, and also that help us understand the strategic environment in the next 5 to 10 years. And then we'll have an afternoon session that is really a session that explores trade-offs in game design and brainstorm scenarios. And so we've got resources for three-day gaming events and for professional gaming consultants to run these events. So this is a general overview of the project, and I've been asked to talk about why did we choose wargaming? So we didn't start with the question, what problems could gaming help answer? We started with an important national security problem, a current policy problem, and this policy problem is underpinned by a fundamental knowledge gap, a theoretical knowledge gap, because we have very little empirical data on nuclear use, and missile defense technologies is a new thing. We've also got technological change. We've got a changing political relationship with Russia. We've got renewed interest in options like limited nuclear use. And so we just don't have a good enough understanding of how missile defense affects incentives for nuclear use in this changing strategic environment. So we started with a policy problem and looked for the best analytical tools to help produce useful insights. And so gaming is one of these tools, but it's also part of a mixed methods approach. So why do I see gaming as a useful method of inquiry? So these three games, they're not there to reliably test hypotheses. They can't predict future crises. Neither are they going to credibly point decision makers in the direction of the best way forward. And so I explained this to one of our project advisors, who's a former senior Pentagon official, and he said, "Wait, but why are you doing this?" So to me, gaming in this project is useful where other forms of analysis fail. So in situations with highly uncertain analytical outcomes, so for example, Russian nuclear doctrine calls for limited nuclear strikes to de-escalate a conventional conflict. So would putting missile defense in that equation, would it take these sort of cheap shots off the table, or would it make them more likely because the Russians would be seeking to demonstrate intent and not actually cause significant damage? So gaming can produce useful qualitative insights into a crisis decision-making process, and it could also help serve as an aid to thinking and further hypothesizing. So we need to identify the factors, the technological and human factors that affect the relationship between missile defense and nuclear risk, and also what are the mechanisms? I mean, how is it that these factors interact? The other value of gaming here would be the essentially the social benefits of a track 2 or a track 1.1 effort. So having different participants together in the same room will help create a shared understanding among them, and hopefully if we have Russian and NATO participants, we'll create a shared understanding of the challenges and the new requirements for strategic stability. It's also a way of having, gaming can be seen as a structured interview. So it's a way for eliciting expert input into an area where people have no actual expertise. So how do we get people interested in the project and in using gaming? Well, frankly, gaming was not a hard sell. I mean, the only person I had trouble convincing of the merits of wargaming has been Phil Sabin. And Phil is my advisor at King's, and he's advised me against including gaming in my PhD thesis because it's a problematic method of inquiry. But we've gotten good support here at King's, and Wynn Bowen, who heads our new school for security studies, he was eager to support the project and so now serves as its director. So the gaming wasn't a hard sell. The Carnegie Corporation of New York, our funder, they issued a call for proposals on new technologies in the future of deterrence. And so this was a new initiative for them, but Carnegie are one of the largest funders for nuclear security work in the non-governmental field. And so they specifically said that they see value in projects that do tabletop exercises, some kind of scenario planning, and so they considered that quite innovative. So there were 50 proposals. So they were interested in gaming, but it wasn't easy to get this because there were 50 proposals from European and US research teams, and only six of those got funded. And I think the reason for our success and the key in putting this together is identifying the policy need and the analytical need. Gaming in itself as part of a mixed methods approach is very appealing. So gaming wasn't a hard sell. Quantitative modeling, specifically game theoretic modeling, that was a hard sell, and they specifically said you should drop that. We're not interested in quantitative modeling. With regard to government stakeholders, we've gotten quite a bit of engagement. Some are eager to provide input into the tasking and identifying the right problem set. One UK agency has been concerned that the experimentation could undermine existing policies, so they're still haven't made the decision on whether they choose to participate. But overall, we've gotten a very engaged response on both the US and NATO side. And frankly, on the Russian side as well, although we've so far had limited interactions there. So my experience is that policymakers and funders see gaming as an interesting and innovative approach, but also many aren't aware of its limitations. So this is it's work that's ongoing, and I would appreciate your reactions and insights, and I'm happy to talk over lunch. Thank you.
Thank you.